Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Hello to all my Jiu-Jitsu brothers and sisters out there. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is episode 22, and it's our first ever repeat guest. He was also our first ever guest on the show, Mr. Roy Dean, one of my favorite people. We took a slight different approach on this episode. You know, I call Roy up every now and then and we just shoot the shit and chat about life and business and work. And that's what I wanted this episode to be. I wanted it to be as if you guys were listening in on one of our conversations. And I like to think it turned out that way. Before we get into the show, guys, please remember to support the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast by buying some of our awesome BJJ training gear and instructional material. If you head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com and use the coupon code podcast, you'll get 10% off anything in the store. And also remember, we have partnered with Truth Naturals. They do some of the most high quality CBD products in the market. CBD can really help reduce inflammation in the body and help chill you out after hard training sessions. So head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the coupon code JJB Truth to get a good discount on any of their stuff. And finally, guys, please support the show by leaving a review on iTunes. You know, we put in so much effort into making sure this is a high quality product, and it means so much to us and helps us out so much if you can pay us back a little bit by just leaving a review on iTunes. So without further ado, here is Roy Dean number 2. Hey everyone, Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast episode 21. And we have our very first guest returning for the second time. It's only you're the first person who's had a second appearance. It's none other than Roy Dean. Roy, how are you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
Cool. Just before I started this recording, we were chatting about the fact that you went to a Gordon Ryan seminar yesterday, and you said he's a very down-to-earth dude and very cool dude.
You know, yeah, I've been to a lot of seminars, and, you know, I mean, you pick up different vibes from seminar attendees, you know, the people that are hosting, the instructor. And I was just really impressed. He was very down to earth. His instruction was very good. And he wasn't trying to, you know, some people try to take ownership of, like, I came up with this and this. You know, no one disagreed with this. This is the knowledge. This is what I'm putting down. And of course, you know, when you're delivering information, sometimes you have to have a certain level of authoritativeness. But he was not. I mean, his accomplishments speak for themselves. The success of the Dan Hurd Death Squad, and he was really cool. I'm a fan.
That's awesome.
It was a long journey to head up there, but it's well worth it. You know, it's always good to be a student. It's always good to get new perspectives. And some of the things he showed, you know, some things like I kind of do, but he was able to shrink wrap a few things. So that makes it a little bit tighter, a little bit more concise in the way they've packaged it into their system. So yeah, I was
that's good to know.
Impressed.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'd like to meet the kid. I mean, if I'm honest, I don't really follow the pro grappling circuit that much, or as much as I should have, as much as I should. But I do. His name does keep coming up, so I need to check in on one of his seminars one day. What else is going on in your life, Roy? What's keeping you inspired lately?
Well, we're my friend Josh Gold and I are just about to drop a brand new course, and it's not going to be a downloadable instruction. It's going to be on the Kajabi format. Kajabi is kind of an online learning portal, so that you can have videos, but you can have other multimedia resources and notes. So it's a good kind of it's more like a university class. Okay. What we're doing. It's called Bulletproofing Pins, and it's essentially how Aikido practitioners can, if they lose control or fail in their initial technique, how they can gain control quickly and in unfamiliar environments using some jiu-jitsu follow-ups that are still in line with the Aikido principles.
That sounds
And
cool.
We did a tremendous amount of R&D on it. We had a big seminar that was not big in terms of numbers, but you had to apply to it. Aikido instructors went from all over the country, and it was really good. So now it's accessible to everyone. We're going to be launching it in the next week. He's been working hard. I've been working hard. And it's gonna, you know, we're trying to set a new standard. So
good for you, right? Yeah, that's cool. It sounds like it's going to be quality.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, and we have some complementary skill sets. So, this will be definitely one of the best produced, Aikido instructionals and, copious notes, and it should be good. So that's been good. And, I'm heading to see my instructor this weekend. I'm going to San Diego to head to the Harris family gathering. All of his instructors and kind of students of those instructors, they come to San Diego every year.
How many instructors does Roy have in his network now?
I'm not sure. It's got to be, oh my gosh, I'm not sure.
Is it in the dozens or the hundreds or?
In the dozens. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe, I don't know, 30 or, like, yeah. You know, 40 or something.
I remember reading a lot of Roy Harris's stuff back in the day. I mean, this must be going close to 20 years ago. He was one of the first dudes who had stuff out online and interesting quality content online that made sense. And it definitely influenced me during my early years of training. So I'd love to meet Roy as well one day.
Oh, hey man, when you're over here in the US, we can make it happen. He's a very impressive individual.
Does he still have an academy, or has he stopped that?
No, he stopped that. Oh. So I'm, he had an academy for 17 years.
Wow.
In San Diego. And, okay. You know, he's been through it all. He's been through it all. And I mean, that's one reason why I love him as an instructor. He's been through it. And you know, he doesn't have an academy anymore. He just does his seminars. He tries to grow. He's been spending a lot of time in Mexico. He has some connections down there and, trying to grow, a couple of schools in Mexico as well. He's in Norway, and dude, he's all over. He travels even more than I do. So,
damn. Yeah, that's impressive. And now, I mean, what else are you doing besides, I'd like to know what your average day looks like, Roy, because I've got a feeling it might be quite similar to mine. And if that's the case, maybe you can help me overcome some of the pitfalls that I'm experiencing during my average day. So you want to take me through like an average day in the life of Roy Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been going to bed a little bit earlier, so I tend to wake up, you know, fairly early. If I, 6:30 to 7:30 in the morning, and I decide on if I'm going to go to Ashtanga, because Ashtanga is only offered in the morning. I'll basically either do jujitsu, Ashtanga, or it's a rest day, one of those. So physical activity is definitely on the docket. And so in the morning, I'll get up. If it's an Ashtanga day, I'll have coffee, prepare myself, maybe hop in the shower, and then head to Ashtanga, do that for an hour, then come back and eat, and then kind of start with emails and, you know, digital, you know, upkeep. If I'm not doing that, I'll get up in the morning, and I like to do – I live on a golf course. And so I'll get up in the morning, and I'll walk to the clubhouse, and I will do a series of stretches, opening up my back, shoulders, hips. There's an incline where I like to hold a third world squat for a long time. And, you know, I just kind of – I wake up slow. That's my new thing. I don't wake up.
Yeah. I do that as well. I know exactly what you mean. I like to get, it's almost like when I go to sleep, I'm going on this weird trip. And when I wake up, it's like I've arrived back at my body, and it takes like an hour to kind of figure everything out again, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like we're coming back into the world, and I used to get up, and it's not like this never happens, but I used to get up and look at the phone immediately, and then I'm inundated with emails, messages, people tapping on you, and you feel tugged immediately, pulled to pay attention to people that, are asking you for something. So I do my morning walk. I do a meditation out there, if possible, a beautiful little scene over a man-made lake. And then I will walk back, and by then I'm feeling pretty good. Then I'll have breakfast, whatever. I'll do one jiu-jitsu class, usually like an 11 a.m. or an evening class. I happen to be teaching tonight, so I'm not going to be I don't go to a day class. And then it's digital projects, man. I go into, there's not enough hours to do everything I want to do. Whether it's updating my subscription channel, making that fresh, working on new content for one of my projects, doing a writing project, catching up with people, grabbing lunch with friends. It's in a way a very chill existence. On the other hand, I hold myself accountable to a pretty high productivity standard.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And it's almost neurotic. It's not quite there, but I'm like, you gotta produce,
Are you in that kind of, if I'm not doing something work related, I start to feel guilty vibe? I'm sure you've got a bit of that, right?
There is that, except when I'm really burnt, and then I'm like, forget it. It's just my sanity. I gotta
Understand.
just like chill here. And sometimes I can totally drop into that zone, but I do go through bouts, to be totally honest, where I'm like, if I'm not, I have to be productive. And I'm really reassessing social media. There are just my relationship to it. How much do I want to put into a post? How much do I want to? Because sometimes, I think we've talked about this, the quality of the post. I released a video from my Europe trip called Jiu-Jitsu Unites Us All. And dude, the quality of that is so good. I have all this drone footage from Italy and my trip through Norway and blah, blah, blah. And it gets like no views. It
Yeah,
gets
but then throw up a
it doesn't
video
get
of
that
a
many views, but
throw up
people
a video
can
of a hamster like running backwards along some
exactly.
sticky paper or something, and
Exactly.
it's, yeah, I know
And
what you mean.
it's a weird thing. I mean, Facebook is now basically, if it's not promoted, no one sees it. It's really hard. It's a totally different ecosystem than it's been in the past. It continues to change. I never got into Snapchat. I never got into some of the other platforms, Periscope. And I don't really want to. I only post on Instagram occasionally when it's something really cool that I want to share. Something.
I'm totally down.
And so, there is an element of social media maintenance that I do, but I'm really stepping away from that because I just, it's funny. I've seen too many people, I've met people who have a big social media presence, and they're just not the person they claim to be in real life. And I've met people with huge social media presence that play up a character, and then they're actually way cooler in real life.
That's
And
interesting.
I've seen both sides of it. And I just want to have real organic relationships right now.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I mean, the thing that I think you answered, I was going to ask if one of the problems you're having is one of the things I experienced lately is that I get kind of lonely because a lot of my work is done on my own, besides the classes that I teach, like I'm writing my second book now, which you're doing the foreword for, but there's that, and there's managing the sites, and it's all like either in front of a screen or it's writing something down on a piece of paper. And it's because of the I'm self-employed and I'm my own thing. Most of the time, I'm just isolated because my friends are at work, or they're busy doing stuff, and I don't have kids, and sometimes just feel just a little bit lonely, and I can see it puts me in this weird mood. And I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing. I was wondering if you've experienced any of that.
Of course, most definitely. And that, and again, thanks to my brothers and friends at CVBJJ, that it's a huge part of my life. That's the Coachella Valley Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Judo Club that
Okay.
I train at and teach at. I get on the mat, I get all this fraternity, and I get that social interaction that we all need. It's great. It's concentrated, but
It's
it's
concentrated. That's it, the other day I was having such a shit day. It was just one of those fucking days. I was having a fight with someone and I was just really feeling like shit. And the jiu-jitsu class I was teaching class in the evening. So it was the one thing I was holding on to. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get to the academy. I'm gonna do that class, wrestle a little bit with the guys, and I'll feel better. And I did. I remember walking out of that gym, and it was like I was a different person. It's one thing to say all these things like jiu-jitsu helps you feel more connected and it helps you relieve stress and blah fucking blah. It's all words and stuff, but it really is true. It really is true. It helps you be more of a social animal, which is what we are. It flicks all those switches that need to be flicked.
absolutely. And when it comes to, I'm starting to look at jujitsu. Stop me if you've heard this before, but I call it like it's a happiness machine. I'm able to. I just put a little bit of energy into it. I put a couple quarters in, and
That's
I'm
cool.
able to have this venue where I can dial up my happiness. I stimulate the machine, which is my body, in just the right way to be able to get the kind of dosage that I need. Maybe it's a I'm going to go hard today, and it's really serious on the mat, and you get that kind of rush. Now, there are some schools where every class is like that, right? Where everything it's really hard, competition oriented. Then other days, I can just barely, I don't need to dial it up to 11. I can just barely turn it to a 2 and kind of float and flow. And so I can dial the machine up to whatever level of stimulation that I need that I'm capable of handling. So it, and you get this incredible pump, not just physical, but then you have the problem-solving aspect and you get the social aspect. And so to me, jiu-jitsu makes me happy. And if
That's
it's it,
cool.
a lot of competition doesn't make me happy. It can make you high and it feels good to win, but for me, competition, it's outweighed. It's just
Yeah,
outweighed.
I
I
don't
prefer
enjoy that
just to.
vibe when you I think we've perhaps you and I have spoken about it before, but I don't. I'll do it for people because I care about them and I want to go coach them or support them. But if I'm honest, being at a jiu-jitsu competition is one of my least favorite things to do, full stop. I really, really don't enjoy it. There's something about like the energy in the air, like it just fucking rubs me the wrong way, if I'm honest.
Well, dude, it's because you've done that, right? You've done that. You've been through that. You've competed. You've won. You understand, like at the time, it was like, okay, man, this is it. This is the energy I need to absorb. I need to be in the mix here, And the energy is weird. The energy is definitely weird. A lot of guys puffing their chest out, They don't want to move. They want you to like move around them. It's like all these subtle dominance games going on in the crowd, not just on the mat. It's a weird thing. I remember I did Pan Ams, and my girlfriend at the time, she brought one of her friends who was a PhD in psychology. She said, "Well, what'd you think?" She said, "Hungry street dogs."
Damn. Damn. That's interesting. I mean, I actually want to stop using the word interesting. I watched I don't know if you've watched a film called Captain Fantastic.
No.
Oh, dude, this film is, to everyone out there listening, if you have not yet seen it, watch it immediately. It stars Viggo Mortensen, the guy from Lord of the Rings, Aragorn, the main character. He's a super hippie guy who takes his seven kids and raises them in the woods, basically. I think somewhere not too far from Oregon or somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And he is homeschooling them and teaching them how to hunt and fish and educating them to an incredibly high degree. And he's always testing them, which I love. Like he will say, he'll call the one kid and he'll say, okay, what's the Bill of Rights? And then the kid will have to explain it to him. And one of the things in one of these tests that he gives one of his daughters, he has them all reading great works of literature and fiction all the time. And then he'll test them on what they're reading. So his daughter's reading War and Peace or something like that, and he asks her, well, where are you in the book, and what do you think of it? And she says it's interesting, and he says interesting is a non-word. It just doesn't really describe anything or doesn't say how you're feeling, and it's been so overused, and it's been on my mind a lot lately because I use that word interesting a lot, and I've realized that it's not specific enough. But anyway, it is very intriguing that the guy said hungry street dogs because, there is that hunger, bro. I get it. Like I remember it. Like you want to show what you can do, and you want to get that medal, and
Yeah. You want to show people that you're good too. You
Or
know,
you want to
look.
find out if you are good. You want to know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And once it stopped being kind of that personal exploration for me, it's like, oh no, I can win. It kind of fell off, and it's hard. People believe me. People still encourage me to compete, but it's just
I think it has to come from a
resonating.
place. Oh,
I
yeah.
feel like I have other skills. I have other things that I contribute can contribute that are a little bit more that are deeper, man.
It's got to
That
come from a place that I would consider competing again if it was kind of like, yeah, me and the boys are heading down to this comp for fun, like, and we're gonna go have a weekend there, and I dig that. I love that vibe of it. I really enjoy that kind of camaraderie, and you go and you all stay at the hotel together and you see the sights, and then you go and compete and you cheer your brothers on and stuff. I love that aspect of it, but it's the very specific kind of vibe at the venue that I'm not a huge fan of, but I suppose that's the cost of entry. Those are the quarters to get the good experience out of it, you know?
absolutely. And I will echo that sentiment. Like, the road to war is a very intimate, personal, interconnected road that you share with those guys. And that's one of the best aspects of competing is the journey to the venue. The journey to, you share stuff in the car that, obviously you wouldn't share at the academy. You guys are People are often scared, nervous. They're bleeding out energy. They're sharing things. It's a whole, and jiu-jitsu also gives you an excuse to go to these places. Like, okay, we're
That's
going to go
true.
to New York. We're going to go to here. We're going to travel to Europe and do the Europeans. It is the reason to get out of your house and end the isolation. So, I mean, those are really amazing elements of it, but there's an upside and downside, and for me, it's just, yeah, it's pretty,
Fair.
yeah,
It's more downside than upside for you at the moment, and that's, I mean, fair enough, Roy. I totally understand that. Roy, what else is going on? Like, what non-jiu-jitsu related, non-work related stuff? You told me, we discussed about a week ago, you had a pretty intense, I don't know how to say it,
trip.
entheogenic experience is maybe the best way to put it.
So essentially, my massage therapist ended up passing on a psychedelic, and I ended up trying it with a friend, and it was really, dude, I'm telling you, I've done a few psychedelics in my life, very rarely, but occasionally. LSD when I was younger, ayahuasca, mushrooms, and it's not really recreational. It's more of, I'm trying to understand something, or I was really inspired by this JRE podcast, Joe Rogan podcast. I believe it's Paul Stamets. He's a mushroom expert.
Okay.
And he was talking about microdosing, and essentially I took a very low dosage. But dude, even a low dosage was too much. Too much. Here's the thing. I just had a conversation with a friend, and he used to be a DJ in Ibiza, and he doesn't do that any of that stuff anymore. Because he had a couple of bad trips, and he's like, it's great, and then it turns, and then he never wants to do it again.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling that way myself. It wasn't necessarily there were incredible moments in it. There were some moments where I wasn't totally digging it, but I do feel ultimately it's kind of therapeutic for your brain. In general, to do that every once in a while. And also, I have to say there's something about it mellows you out. I find myself forgiving a lot of people. I find myself much more, empathetic and sensitive to people like, family and friends, and it was definitely a beneficial experience.
I'm of the opinion
that interest in like replicating that anytime in the near future. It was good. People do a lot more, but it was totally fine.
And I'm of the opinion at the moment, Roy, like I've been thinking about this a lot for the last week. My business partner, he kind of gets a bit upset with me sometimes when I'm in these intense, reflective, psychedelic periods. And I understand, I finally figured out why that is. And it's, how you see those dudes who, they have some kind of autism, or they're on some part of the spectrum of the Asperger spectrum. And they have these incredible gifts, like they can memorize huge amounts of data, or they can draw with this photographic, what I'm talking about. But the thing is, they always seem to be compromised in another area, whether it's lacking social skills or they're unable to do the most basic tasks like feeding themselves or clothing themselves. It's what I've realized is that someone said something to me, a guy called Paul Moran. Paul, you know. His teachers always says to him, no one gets everything. So when you see a guy who's, amazing at jiu-jitsu or really good at business or whatever his set of talents or skills are, it's not necessarily a good idea to worship or admire him or use him as your idol, because there's something that you're not seeing where he is usually lacking. And I've realized you only have a certain amount of brain power to allocate to anything. And what I've noticed, what I'm starting to understand, is when you go into those states and you take ayahuasca or LSD or other entheogens or psychedelics, they do give you something. They give you access. You start swimming or playing in this different window of reality. Or this different dimension, and they do allow you to navigate that. They do allow you to navigate your subconscious and find out these deep things about yourself. And I think that's an incredibly valuable gift that they impart, but it comes at a cost. And that cost to me is your I don't want to say presence, because it's not the right word, but your grasp of the rational, logical, day-to-day aspects of life is compromised. That's at least been my experience. So sure, you're gonna have some crazy vision or insight into why, I don't know, you have an issue with women because some girl rejected you at the junior prom dance, whatever it is, like, you're going to figure those things out, right? And you're going to understand, like, how it's caused you all these other issues in your life. But at the same time, you'll forget your car keys, or you'll lock your car keys in your car or something like that. Like, it's kind of, you cannot really cover all those aspects at the same time. There's always this weird give and take. Does that make sense to you?
But absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, a couple interesting quotes that I've gotten a lot out of. Dr. Drew Pinsky, years ago, he said, there's no free rides in Mother Nature.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so true. You know, it's fine. I think these psychedelics are essentially like, you have a lot of writing on the chalkboard and this just kind of wipes it off. You know, you take a wet rag and wipe it off and then you're kind of reset. But, you know, I've run into people that have maybe done it a little bit too much and on the other hand, some people that might benefit and have a more, I don't know, they just need to, they can't open up their fist. It's a fist. They need to open up the hand, release a little bit. You'll be able to feel more. You're feeling everything with the back of their knuckles, right? It's like, no, trust me. The inside of the fingertips is a lot better.
That's a really cool way to think about it. I haven't heard that one before. That's very, very cool. I think, you know what? Okay, because it's the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show, we have to tie that background to Jiu-Jitsu, or I have to tie the background to Jiu-Jitsu, and that fist analogy you've given is absolutely sublime. I'm going to start using that in my teaching. It's exactly the same with Jiu-Jitsu, but let's think of the body as a giant hand, right? If you are tensed and you are making a, you know, virtual fist with your body by being this like solid, flexed, super tense structure, you don't feel as much, right?
And right.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that, Roy. I'm gonna use that.
Oh yeah, yeah, my pleasure. You know, it's. I think these are powerful tools that you can use, but it's got to be done, you know, intelligently. For me, I'm pretty sparing with it, you know, but I do think it was really, really valuable.
That's cool.
Absolutely.
I'm always
very valuable, especially heading into a new year, and I'm going to be, I've got all these projects and I've really shifted my attention to giving my affiliates more and trying to do higher level projects. You know, I honestly, I feel like
you just need to hit the reset switch, right?
You do.
And I find that psychedelics are cool for that.
It kind of gave me yet another, we all need a kick in the pants now and then. It's like, Roy, if you're going to do great work, you got to improve. I'm constantly improving, but I signed up recently for a modeling course now that has nothing to do with Instagram or selfies, but it's like complex systems and models. This is done through Coursera. It's through the University of Michigan. A bunch of people have done this online course. And found
it sounds very, very fascinating.
Yeah, and so I'm starting to put it together a little bit. I mean, I'm still in the opening stages of this course, but you know, it's all about modeling can give you more accurate answers. These models, you know, are not all models are wrong, but some are more accurate than others. And modeling is also what we do in jiu-jitsu. Like you use jiu-jitsu to create analogies to the outside world. Oh, well, that's just like, you know, you push in this direction, then they push back. So whether that's, you know, social off balancing or, you know, physical off balancing, whatever. You know, you start to see these parallels between the real world and what happens on the mat. And jiu-jitsu is so, it's difficult because you have to form your own models. People can kind of guide you, but you have to be able to understand movement patterns, understand chunking movements together, in sequences. And then, okay, so you have this little model of movement, and then you have to integrate it with another model of movement, positional model of movement or whatever. And so there's this modeling that happens in our understanding of jiu-jitsu. And I feel like, man, if I get a more theoretical, like solid theoretical background in modeling, I'll be able to apply that to my organization, being able to just have a more robust system in place.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I'm very interested in approaching teaching and just trying different things. You know, I know I'm a good teacher, and I know that my approach is quite unique. I think yours is probably unique as well.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I even get bored of my work, you know, probably because I'm doing it so often. And I want to start doing, I have these kind of out there ideas. I thought one example for a class would be, imagine if I said to you, okay, you have to teach your next class without saying a single word.
Mm.
That's it. You can greet everyone, but that's it. You can say hi. And then you don't tell them what you're doing. You just have to teach using pure physical language. You know, I'm inspired and interested by, I said on another podcast that I was interviewed on recently, that's what I really am fascinated by, is taking jiu-jitsu to a new level, because we're all operating on these very old paradigms. They're old systems of learning, like old pedagogues. Like you go to a class, the general classes, you do your warm-up, you do a technique, you practice that technique in a specific scenario, and then you spar, right? And not all classes are like that, but that's the general template. And
it's old.
I know for the average student, it's cool, because you know, you could do that 300 or 400 times before you start to get bored. But guys like you and I mean, I must have done that close to 1,000 times now, whether in my own training or whether the classes I teach. And I want to start pushing things forward. I want to start creating learning experiences that are unusual and effective. And you get what I'm saying, right, Roy?
100%. And, you know, one of my projects, I've been working on it for a couple of years now, but now that Bulletproofing Pins is getting pushed out on this Kajabi platform, Art of the Academy I've started assembling it together, and it's all about how to teach jiu-jitsu, right? And so I had a different approach pulled from various martial arts that kind of, it takes a traditional model, but then it also tweaks it a little bit. You know, and I think we should look at every aspect of that traditional model. Like, why do you need a warm up? Or what can the warm up be that's accomplishing more than one task? I feel a lot of people do that traditional mold because they don't want to disrespect their instructor when that person was doing it, and they
for the same reason
respect their instructor.
Basically. Yeah,
you know, but you can move it forward. In fact, honoring your instructors, like taking their legacy and evolving it with more powerful tools and mechanisms. So I think that, you know, we need to look at the warm up. Me personally, you know, one of my good friends, Rick Ellis, he mentioned he really enjoyed that I would thread things together. I would teach a technique, and then okay, the next technique in that sequence, if they block it, we go here. So by the end, we're doing 5 to 7 techniques, you know, something more tricky thrown in for the advanced students at the very end, which for the intermediate students and beginning students, it's like, oh, that's where we're going to go. You can reach towards it, you know, something to strive for. And advanced students, they hone their basics, plus they get a little something at the end. And then that curriculum, like, you don't spend a month on the same position. You don't spend a week on the same position. You integrate different aspects in the overall curriculum in that class. And then you kind of reinforce that through other classes. Those same positions get reinforced. So you have kind of the micro and then the macro arc of teaching, where things get pulled back in. And that facilitates long-term learning much better than kind of rote cramming, which is what I feel a lot of the, you know, it's like, let's just do this one thing and we'll do it over and over and over again. Okay, now let's spar. Long-term learning is facilitated by that kind of where people can say hello to those techniques that they touched on, and then they're reinforced, but they're reinforced in a more subtle way. And and I think that's the future. I think that's the future of teaching. And it keeps it much more interesting for the students. Because in a way they...
And it keeps more interesting for the teacher. And that is vital, because if you're not... I've seen it in myself. If I teach you... If I'm teaching something that I am bored of, my class is crap. I just know it. And that actually is my impetus for learning new things and progressing my jiu-jitsu, is because... Otherwise, I'm just chronically bored when I'm teaching, and I hate that feeling. I don't want to put out that crappy energy. I don't want to get to a seminar and be like, okay, we're going to do this thing that I've done 40 or 50 times before. I've seen it in longtime instructors that have just stopped growing, and they're showing the same thing they've been showing for like 20 years, and like the whole vibe of the seminar is he just wants to get it over with, and I definitely don't want to be that kind of person, man.
Got it. Well, you know, it's part of that different kind of modeling for instruction. It keeps it fresh for you, which is vitally important, because people know when you're dialing it in, they can feel it, you know, and then it's also, you know, it keeps it fresh for them, keeps it fresh for you. And sometimes going to a seminar with the new king, where you're getting new input, a different take on things, that can help freshen it up for you.
Definitely.
You know, and also even going to maybe martial arts seminars in other disciplines can also
Definitely.
Make it interesting. You know, the best teachers that I've ever known will go to seminars to watch the teacher.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you know, now that you mentioned that, I did a nutrition type course about 5 years ago with this famous strength and conditioning coach, and I still to this day use a lot of his little teaching tricks and methods when I'm teaching a jiu-jitsu class. So
yeah,
what you're saying is totally true. Yeah, Roy, my brother, it's coming up on 40 minutes, and it's been a long day. This is actually the second podcast of the day I'm recording, so I'm starting to fatigue a little bit mentally, but thank you so much, dude. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm going to see you in the flesh soon, man. I'm going to meet you for the first time soon, I think.
I know. I'm looking forward to it, dude. 2018 is going to be amazing. I have some courses that are coming out. Let's do that instructional that we talked about. I have a feeling that it's not going to be about curriculum. It's going to be about principles, concepts, techniques, and kind of the deeper insights into jiu-jitsu. I think if we could do that in 2018, and I think it'd inspire a lot of people.
We are doing that in 2018, my friend. Definitely. So Roy, if people want to find out about this new project that you're about to release, where would they check that out?
Oh, go to aikidojournal.com.
Okay.
And it's going to be the first module in the new Aikido Journal Academy.
Sure.
Which is kind of a long-term project, but hopefully that will elevate the art of Aikido, give it a little bit new life, and you know, BJJ will go through a similar cycle as to what Aikido is going through, and I think there's a lot of lessons on both sides to be gleaned. So, hey,
that's great.
I appreciate you you bringing me back on the podcast. It's always good to talk to you.
Of course, my brother. Blessings on you, Roy. Keep the faith, my man. Bye. Always love speaking to Roy. I feel that the guy's mind works in a very similar way to mine. And he always kind of, I don't know, it's just one of those things where when you meet someone who's on a very similar path to yourself, it helps you feel less lonely about your life in the world. Because you think, okay, there's someone else out there that's going through what I'm going through. And I always get that vibe when I speak to Roy. So it's just such a pleasure for me to speak to him. Well, that was this week's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed, and I will chat to you again in a week's time. Until then, train smart.